on my last trip out here, so I'll be brief, but I just want to touch on a couple points today. Most of my time will be spent on how the One Call Board responding to some of the Pipeline Task Force report, specifically, and it's a lot bigger than it was when we thought. So, I'll touch base briefly on some of the issues that surfaced last year. First one, we approved some rules in December of 07. I know in the pipeline group there was discussion on marking the exterior edge of the facilities. It was not included in there, but I want to highlight to you that the only reason it was not included is because in the legal interpretation we got was it's already in the statute. I know from my spring meetings many of you kind of decided that didn't exist and you weren't marking the edges, and I just want to put you in guard that if it comes before us as a complaint as a board, our legal opinion's got to mark the edges. So you can interpret it any way you want, but from our perspective, should there be a complaint or something filed, we're going to follow our legal guidelines and take it from there. So you need to be alert to that. It wasn't one because it wasn't included. That it wasn't one the one board might have, might not have adopted. It was one that the legal opinion said our current statute of definition of marking requires to mark the edges. The second one that went through, which is right now, I'm going to say, being applied in various stages throughout the state, is that all new facilities placed after January 1st must be locatable. Rapid City is probably the positive sign of that one. They started last year where all their sewer and water lines require copper wire, and they're duct taped every 4 feet, which is probably the best side to those that, as we traveled this spring, said, what rule? So basically, you'll see it throughout the state, but it fit very perfectly. We do not specify the method. It says it's got to be locatable within 18 inches either way. So we do have people using GPS. We have people using copper wires. We have people using marker balls. So we didn't tell them how they do. We just tell them you got to be able to locate it. So probably the one that's got the most attention is last year, 2 years ago, we probably were here and said we were looking at this, but water and sewer laterals have been a national issue. We actually had the AGC and the municipalities try to reach a compromise. It was included in our rules from 07. We agreed to pull it out. The task force couldn't reach a decision. So there was a point where our board said we need to resolve this issue one way or another. So we drafted a request to the Attorney General. And basically he came back and clearly stated that water and sewer lines needed to be located to the house. It was black and white. As someone said, from a municipal point of view, I think they'd like to go back and take our rules and adopt those and go from there. But it's in place. It does fit with the other. We do not make an interpretation beyond those that were described in the Attorney General's opinion. But there are other circumstances applied to as a general guideline. We always tell you to check with your attorney. But if you're controlling how it's installed, you probably are covered by this rule. But there will be other attorneys who might read that different seating. The reason that I would highlight that came up this spring you need to be aware of, because basically our issue as One Call Board was the sewer line, not the water line. If you hit the water line with a directional bore and you're putting in gas, you're going to see water spilling all over, and sure, it's a mess, but it can be fixed. When you see a directional bore go through a sanitary sewer and it's a gas line and it plugs that sewer line up, and the homeowner calls Roto-Rooter and he comes and cleans it out, you know what the next result is. We always look at those other states. In my traveling this spring, I had the city of Melbridge come to me and said, in their final inspection of a new development, they found a natural gas line directionally bored through their sanitary sewer. So it just basically tells you, without a camera, we could have had Mitchell too. We also had a case where in one of our cities they were plowing a gas line in. When they went and did the inspection of that development, they found that they had plowed the gas line directly through. It had broken the sanitary sewer pipe. We can question why it was only 3.5 or 4 feet deep, but we all know with landscaping, depths change drastically. So it basically tells you that while we think these issues are big in other areas, we had two cases in South Dakota that could have very easily resulted in major issues. So we're pleased we did what we did. I know there's a lot of agony going on with cities and others, but basically, at a certain point in time, like I said, we've got to start here and move forward. And it's clearly put emphasis on our first step that said all new facilities got to be locatable. So if there was a municipality that didn't understand why we put it in place, in 07 that clearly should understand why it's there today. Just a couple operational things I'll touch base very quickly on. For those of you on the web-based side, be familiar with the fact that all your database updates now will be web-based. As people go, if they're using FM and those type, they're going to transition you when you make your first call in. Probably the other one I'll flag you, we updated our website. And the only reason I highlight this is there under both excavator and facility operator, you can click on South Dakota Listserv. If you want to know when our minutes are, what our agenda is, when the proposed rules are, when our spring meetings is, if you register there, all you do is put your name and email address. When we post something to that website, too, it's automatically sent out to you so you can take a quick look and know where it is. You don't have to program yourself to go in and look. The only thing we do not include in that, will not send you a notification of enforcement actions. So just for that page. So if you're interested in what's going on, register. We're not going to send, try to keep manually keep people notified. There's five items that have come up before us for administrative rules consideration going forward, and for those of you not in South Dakota, highlight, our board has the ability to draft administrative rules by statute. Where our board is appointed by the governor, and they're basically linked to PUC, so they have regulatory authority. We had a request from the city of Sioux Falls to look at mandatory white lining within the city limits. It's been discussed at length. I think I can fairly say, and Doug might disagree, but I think you will agree, it's probably dead on arrival now. We've discussed this numerous times, and our issue is we love white lining, but as soon as we tell the electrical contractor and peer that he's got to drive 30 minutes to Blount to put in a white flag because he's doing something there, his next step will be, excuse my language, but the hell with calling one call, I'm going to go do my digging. We think the long-term ramifications of putting a mandatory white lining, and look at our rural area, probably has more negatives than positives. The other avenue we have is cities have the ability to make white lining mandatory through city ordinance and permit process, and utilities have the ability to make white lining mandatory if they require all their contractors to white line. I know Mid-Continent does. I think MDU does. When they issue a contract, their contractors got a white line. There's a lot of avenues to fix this with us out of student statute. We have one that's just come in. It's a request for positive response on those tickets where it's cleared in the office. No one goes to the site. We have several groups, and I'll bring this to the board. They haven't seen it yet, but basically it's come in. These are your good excavators that said, when I get that site, and I haven't heard from anybody, and I don't see a clear sign, I'm not comfortable digging. So it's one that we will need to take a look at. Is there a way we can send clear notifications on by email, fax, or phone to those people? And the reason I respond to is when my good excavators are thinking safety, we need to at least give that some serious consideration. We have a request from South Dakota Telephone Association to address that contractor that calls in a ticket, does no work, calls in a remark, does no work, calls in a remark, does no work, to incorporate the enforcement process to include those. We do not have that there today. It probably will get a positive response. At one time they wanted to charge, but we didn't like the idea of charging. The negative ramifications follow white lining. We had two requests come out of the Pipeline Task Force. One was to get mandatory damage reporting. I've done a lot of research on it. I know that CGA on a national level loves it. When we took a look at what was involved, what other one calls were using, I don't think you'll see us proceed with this for a couple reasons. One, there are a lot of companies don't have their damages in an electronic format today, so they'd have to auto-transmit. So at this point, I don't think that will get addressed, at least at this time, from the board. I think we will delay or not move forward on any mandatory damage reporting from a one call. Let me clarify. That's not for an excavator who gets a pipe. That's mandatory. They call that utility. This is at the end of the year. Northwestern Energy would do a data dump to set, here's the 200 damages and that type of background. So it's an annual report of that type we'd go forward with. I'll touch base briefly, or we'll go to the high-profile facility, probably the most controversial one in some areas in that. Stacy, if you want to hit it, I'll go forward. The high-profile facility came from one person. And if you want to know who to blame for this, you can blame me. I had the opportunity to testify in front of that committee, and they asked one question, if there was one thing I would do to make digging safer. My statement was, I still had a difficult time after 10 years to figure out that a telephone drop wire and a 700 PSI pipeline were treated identical. I mean, for some reason, you got to look through this and said, there's got to be a difference. One will kill me and one cuts off the phone service. So from my perception, I thought it was necessary, and we discussed it at the board unofficially. To your background, I'll tell you that there are three other states I know right now have the same issue surfaced. When I was in February, I talked to Florida. I happen to know their attorney very well. And we've kind of taken the California model and thrown some out because California, if you want regulation, they got more than anybody needs. But basically, we've done a prelim definition. I want to tell you this is in concept right now. Nothing's been submitted. I gave Nathan copies, so if you guys want to look at it, we're welcome to input either through Doug or direct to me. We'll address these issues. But that's basically how we define it as it sits now. And the definition only drives you to where we go with our next steps. Basically, once a high-profile facility would do two things. The big pipeline companies, it probably doesn't impact some of the distribution companies, it does. But all facilities that you'd consider high profile have to be in a separate CDC code or a separate database. So basically it means MDU, if you have used some of your transmission and your distribution in the same database, it would force you to split that. And the reason would be at the end of that call, if Northern Natural Gas comes up, it's a CDC code, and the CSR got it, that CSR at the close of that call would notify the caller there is a high profile facility in your proposed dig site. And then they would try to verify the contact information, say, hey, is there an email, is there a fax, is that available? But basically, it would, and there would be a pop-up screen, basically, like we read in an emergency, where that CSR will read them, the high-profile facility, and here's some of the conditions you got to be aware of. But that caller, or if you were electronic ticketing, there would be a pop-up screen would pop up to say you need to be aware of this facility is in your area. So from the center part, from a facility operator, it would say if the operator identifies that they're in close proximity, and that we said, if prior to the start date, they shall conduct a meet at a mutual agreed upon time. So it forces the excavator to meet you at that site if you think it's there. Note that we said if you identify, if you know from looking at a ticket that they're not in close enough that you need to meet with them, you would have no obligation to just let it go as normal. If they say, hey, I'm digging a north side road, and you know you're on the south side and you're comfortable, that's your prerogative. But basically, it does give you the opportunity to force that meet, and it basically goes from there, and it does require you to keep a record of the date and time of your meet. Probably the part that benefits you from an excavator point of view, if there's no contact, they can proceed as usual. They're required to attend the meet, and it would basically say that if a meet is scheduled, no excavation can commence until the completion of the meet. So basically, it stops excavation temporarily. If requested the meet, provide notification, and you'll see I use the word within 25 feet, and I use the word may. We've been through this before. Some pipeline companies want 10 feet, some want 15, some want 25. It says you have the opportunity that you may require your presence at the site. But it also says no excavation can occur in the area without the operator presence. So it does give you that legal leverage you don't have today. So basically, and again, I highlight to you that this isn't in law. This is in concept that I have drafted based on my contacts with my counterparts, meetings with some gas companies here and that type. We welcome input or comments. The one I'd highlight you that I get comments on is I only want the part I like. That's not what's going to happen. I want the database, I want the notification, but I don't want any of the rest. I think in general we're willing to modify, make it user-friendly to both parties. But basically, we're not going to take one side of this and make it good for the pipeline company and bad for the excavator or vice versa. We're going to agree and hold. All aspects of this process would be subject to penalty under our statute. And our target date would be, I'll use the word January, would be early 2010. We're like the other states in this room here. We don't introduce anything in July because no one's going to listen to us anyway. It gives us the opportunity. If we have it in place in January, it means next spring, we can cover these issues. But you're called to the bar.
Sorry.
The bar is called. So that's where we are. Basically, with that, I did give this same thing in a summary format, just on this specific one, to Nathan. So if anybody in South Dakota or the other states have interest, would like to provide comments, we'd certainly welcome them. Send them to me by email. I'd like to have them by mid-May at the latest. I think at our next board meeting, we will probably approve this in concept. And then we've got to send it to the LRC to clean up the wording, dot the I, cross the T, do all those things. And at that point, then we'd send it back out to everybody and say, hey, take a look at this in the final format. So I want to assure you it's not in the final format. So with that, I'll stop. If you have questions on either issue, I'll be glad to address it. Someone have a question back there? Yeah.
How did you come up with the 300 PSI?
1 second, the green light.
How did you come up with the 300 PSI that said that was your high profile pipeline?
I met with some gas people and basically picked that number out that it was high enough that it didn't get into the distribution side. It's flexible. Some states had 500, nothing arbitrary about it. Just we didn't want to get a lot of little distribution stuff in here. But we want to make it only for that type. And you'll also see we made it broad enough so that if SDN and their high impact network that feeds the lab out here, if it goes, they could step in. It's also inconvenient enough that if someone wants to put a lot of other garbage in, there's enough other responsibility to make it a nuisance that it's not very cost effective unless it's big. But it would open itself up for stuff, not only pipeline, but if Ellsworth has some stuff that feed that air base that they want to put in there, they have that prerogative. So it does broaden itself from that perspective. Any other questions? If not, I'll just close with one to tell you what experience does, since this is my last trip around. I'm leaving after this July. I had the opportunity, and we were talking here about Harold Winnie. I met him in February and said, high-profile facilities, it's interesting. Certainly from the Pipeline Task Force, some of you are on it, has got a lot of attention. Because you and Newmorn released it, and I had a call from Washington, D.C., said, we're willing to come and help you with this process. My experience of working in corporations said this is like staff. And when I worked for a utility company, we spelled staff STAPH, called it some type of infection. And that's exactly how I perceived help coming from Washington. So we'll just leave it at that. But to the other point, if you as people in the field that work on this every day see a fallacy or a suggestion to make this better, it's a lot easier to fix it now before we put it in place than it is after we're done. So with that, I thank you for the opportunity to come.